This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
The importance of September. We've touched on this a couple times. You've mentioned individual games. We've talked about games in the month of September, and they're all scattered about the ninth month of the year right there. They're all there. You can take them from opening weekend to the 11th to the 18th, so on and so forth, right? Well, our crack staff's gone back and done some research. So we're going to throw 2020 out because everybody knows it was weird and a late start and you weren't sure what was going to happen. How important is the month of September for the ACC? Well, 11 teams have finished September under 500. Only North Carolina was under 500 for September all three seasons, the last 3 years, 19, 18, and 17. For what it's worth, Carolina was 1-0 last season, beat Syracuse 31-6 on September 12th. Okay, so let's go to 2019, and let's look at kind of how it stacked up. Here's what the ACC looked like in the month of September 2 years ago. Remember, that was Mack Brown's first year back in Chapel Hill, Jeff Collins' first year at Georgia Tech. Clemson and Wake Forest were both 5-0 after September. Virginia 4-1. Duke 3-1. Now, of note, we know what happened with the Tigers, right? Wake Forest would go on to finish the year 8-5. Okay? So that's 2019,
Pat. Hey, Wes, let's point out that we also know what happened to Virginia that year. That was the year with a expectation level through the roof. How are you going to handle it? And, you know, you got to get off to a good start, yep. All right? I mean, obviously, you'd rather be off to a good start than a bad start. Yep. But if you're going to make some inroads in your conference, and this is true, we were talking about the ACC, the SEC, Big Ten, you fill in the blank. You got to get off to a good start. You have to. I mean, it's hard to play uphill if you give stuff away early in the season. Those games count just as much as the ones in November.
That's it. I agree totally on that. Let's go to 2018 here and take a look at 2018 and the month of September in the ACC. No surprise, Clemson went 5-0. NC State started the year 4-0, would finish at 9-4 that year for the Wolfpack. Look at the one-loss teams, Mark.
Well, what I just told you is it falls into place. I don't care if we go back to 1806. You do whatever you want. You better play well in September. I mean, if you're going to have a year in which you say, listen, we're going bowling or we can compete and win our division or, hey, we're a conference champion or whether we're in the playoffs or going to a major bowl or whatever it may be, you got to get off to a good start just the way it is. And I know we're going to get more specific here, but you know, you just none of these surprise you in terms of teams that end up having good years. Man, September's got to be a good one.
Yeah, all right. Let's flip through September 2017 here. Just real quick, because I want to show you just how the continuity, and also look at the variables from school to school here. Carolina 1-4 in 17, Clemson 5-0, Miami 3-0, Duke, Wake. Look at all the 4-1s. I mean, everybody was ready, weren't they?
Well, you know, the other thing
in 2017.
The other thing here, Wes, is scheduling, right? And that's why we spend time looking at schedules in 21. When you start looking about like a team like Virginia Tech immediately comes to mind. You know, North Carolina at home, at West Virginia, Notre Dame. I mean, getting off to a good start becomes paramount. And I don't think there's a bigger game. We've talked about this before with North Carolina and Virginia Tech. That Friday night, 3 weeks and a day from right now, it's huge. We had Mac on the show yesterday. He was talking about, man, going to Lane Stadium, tough place to play. They'll be ready for us. They don't particularly care for us. And the pressure on Virginia Tech, knowing your season is so front-loaded with the schedule of home games, you got to get off to a great start. So, here, again, we'll go through a bunch of these. But well, North Carolina, Virginia Tech is a different pressure on North Carolina. As Mac said yesterday, you know what, we've taken a great deal of pride that the media has paid attention to us in the offseason. Now we got to go prove it.
Yeah, you'll hear that and more from Mac Brown coming up bottom of the hour in case you missed it. Here is the three league games in 4 weeks for North Carolina. That's a pretty sturdy test, Pac.
You think
when
so?
You think about Blacksburg. Well, I mean, Georgia State's a better team. They're a good Sun Belt team.
Please, North Carolina will wax Georgia State.
Virginia? Okay, I'm not saying they're not going to lose. They're going to lose the game. Georgia State, Sean Elliott does a nice job with the Panthers.
That's
Virginia, I mean, I'll have to tell you about Carolina and Virginia. 2 years in a row, Bronco Mendenhall's found a way.
Well,
then Georgia Tech on the 25th. And here's the thing. Jeff Collins, we have no idea yet. We really don't know much about Georgia Tech. You're going to find out in the first 3 weeks because it's Northern Illinois, Kennesaw State, and Clemson for Georgia Tech before Carolina visits on the 25th.
I like North Carolina's schedule. I do. I mean, that opener is an important game.
Yeah.
I can't emphasize that enough. But, you know, Georgia State, they'll beat Georgia State sideways. And Virginia has got to prove they can win on the road. I mean, we have talked about the Hoos ad nauseum, like their team. But if they're going to get to the next level, just like we talked with Mac yesterday, you got to be able to take it on the road and win. And the fact that North Carolina gets Virginia at home is a good thing. And then you take your chances going to Atlanta and see what the Jackets have, assuming that they're still connected. I mean, they got to hold on for dear life with that schedule. That schedule is filthy. It's tough.
All right, let's, beyond Carolina, let's look at some other September schedules here in the ACC, given kind of the track record of what we've seen the last three normal years, if you will. And let's start with Miami because we know they've got the defending national champs in Atlanta on the opening weekend of the season, and that's a 3:30 start on ABC. We've talked about those first three games a lot here.
Yeah.
But I would go ahead and throw that Virginia game on the back end of it too, Mark.
Well, to me, you mentioned North Carolina. This is a schedule in September that you got to pay attention to because obviously you're playing the number one team in the country in Alabama. Got your hands full. I don't care who you are. You'll have your hands full against the Tide. I've told you, Appalachian State is the one that pops to me because, number one, they've got a really good football program. They're going to be really excited to play you. And you cannot afford a hangover, regardless of outcome, against Alabama to affect you in week two. You play a team in the Big Ten in Michigan State. I know it's been kind of a rebound situation for them, but still, they'll have athletes, they'll be physical, they'll be talented, and you jump on three straight games right out of the gate. Bama, App State, Michigan State. Listen, you're going to be tested. Physically, you are going to go through a grind, and you mentioned an ACC game there at the very end of the month against Virginia. And, you know, if the Hoos can upset North Carolina on the road, maybe Virginia comes in there with Brendan Armstrong thinking, guess what? We tried to tell all you guys it's not about the U and it's not about North Carolina or Pitt. It's about Virginia. So September is a load for Miami. To me, that is a schedule you look at and you go, hey, you got to be ready to play. You got to be ready to play from the very first kickoff.
Let's go to Clemson next. Because we know the Tigers and Dogs play on Saturday night in Uptown Charlotte on ABC. South Carolina State the next weekend, followed by Georgia Tech, and then at NC State on the 25th.
You know, the best case scenario is Clemson's 4-0, and you're like, well, that's who we thought they are, right? Worst case scenario is, guess what? Georgia game's a toss-up game to me, in my opinion. You choose your poison. And, you know, NC State kind of feels like they're so due to beat the Tigers, right? I know Clemson's had their number, but this could be a really special year for NC State. Mm-hmm. I mean, who knows? What happens if all of a sudden we fast forward the clock and Clemson's 2-2 in October? It changes the entire narrative. Again, keep talking about the narrative, right? The only way you can change it is by winning games. So I think Clemson, two of their biggest – I mean, obviously the Georgia game will probably be the most difficult on their schedule. And NC State could be their most tricky road game on the schedule. They get both in September. So Dabo knows, hey, it's go time for his guys as well.
Yeah. Florida State also falls into this category, right? We keep coming back to, you mentioned it yesterday in our visit with Coach Clawson. I would keep no matter what happens with Notre Dame, September 18th just pops off the page, doesn't it?
That's
those two games, the 18th at Wake Forest, the 25th with Louisville at home.
Well, the Wake Forest game is, to me, is the one here. I mean, we're going to know a lot more about both those teams in night one, right? And Sunday night with Notre Dame, with all their guys that they lost from a year ago, new quarterback, all that stuff. And same thing with Florida State. I think we're all kind of excited to see what Mike Norvell's got right out of the gate. But I do think that game at Wake Forest is the most important one. You know, you get Louisville at your house. You know, Doak Campbell should be rocking. But you got to be able to take it on the road in this league. And I think Dave Clawson's guys are going to be pretty good. So I'm with you. September 18th, to me, is the one that really, really is important for Florida State. They're all important. But that Wake Forest game, conference game, and your first road trip, we'll find out a lot about both those teams that night in Switzerland.
All right. We're going to use Virginia here as kind of our last analysis piece before we show you something else. Pat, give me some thoughts here on where Bronco Mendenhall's team, I mean, William and Mary, Illinois, Brett Bielema's rebuilding the Illini, at Carolina, Wake, and Miami in order to close the month.
At North Carolina is the first test for the Hoos on the road. Important to win Illinois just because it's a narrative game again, ACC versus Big Ten. But from a conference perspective, Virginia, if you're going to win the Coastal, guess what? You got to beat North Carolina. That means if you lose that game, that's more than just a loss. Mm-hmm. And you're going to have to be able to do it away from Scott Stadium, which has been a problem. And, you know, you look at that schedule, that stretch at North Carolina, Wake, at Miami, at Louisville, 3 of 4 on the road. You're going to find out, and we'll know a bunch about the Hoos before we get to the middle of October.
All right, and you wanted to follow up with Wake Forest here, right? Because
sure.
The Deacons are another team that kind of falls in this from your spot.
Yeah, I go right back to the game we talked about with Florida State. And I said this to the coach the other day, actually yesterday. I think they're going to be 2-0 cruising, and then Florida State, you find out exactly where you are. You know, if you beat Florida State, go 3-0, again, the road trip to Virginia won't be easy. But Louisville, at Syracuse, at Army, Wake Forest could get off to a blazing start if they can take care of their first ACC game this year on the slate. Should be fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Agree with you on that. So September. What do you have? Well, you all not only have really interesting ACC matchups, you have some non-conference games. And then just because we like to keep an eye on this, you have 6 ACC-SEC games in the month of September. And you want to change, as we like to say, Pac, you want to change the narrative. Here's your chance, right?
Yep. I would tell you, obviously, Georgia-Clemson will get all the love in terms of the national exposure. Miami-Alabama is going to get some too. But I think the most important game on that list, and you can call me crazy, I think is NC State at Mississippi State. And the reason I say that is because Georgia, Clemson, Alabama are all college football playoff caliber teams. So, you know, the winner of the Georgia-Clemson game gets a heads up if the loser still has plenty to play for. Bama is going to be a tough out, whether it's Miami or whoever they're playing. Of all those other ones, though, I mentioned this yesterday, Pitt, NC State, Boston College. All three of those teams have unbelievable upside this year because I think all three are going to be able to score. But those three games, I think, are going to be critical for all of them if they're thinking about, hey, can we win 7? Can we win 8? Can we win 9? Is it a great year we go double digits? NC State, to me, of those three, has the largest upside. But they've got to prove that they can go on the road and beat a quality opponent. And whether you think Mississippi State's great or not, isn't even the point. Mississippi State's going to have athletes. They'll be at home. They should be relatively healthy because it's so early. Got to get used to the cowbells. You're going to an SEC venue. Really, I think mentally, a big game for NC State. So we'll see how all this plays out. That's why I can't wait for the games to get started.
Yeah. Don't forget that Pittsburgh, Tennessee, also on the 11th. Big game for the Panthers in the kind of the order of their season. Tennessee's a FPI favorite, by the way, Pac.
I don't care about FPI, but I tell you what's cool. You know, for months and months and months, we've talked about Pitt and Tennessee, and I believe our term was the Johnny Majors Invitational. Have we not mentioned that, I don't know, 50 times in the last 3 months?
Yes.
Right, at least? Guess what was announced? Guess what was announced yesterday? Just take a guess what was announced yesterday.
That they're going to call the game, because it's a home-and-home series over the next 2 years, they're going to call it the Johnny Majors Classic.
Great idea. Great idea. I don't know who came up with it, but that's a great idea. We are all for that. And you know, if you guys listen to the show a little more often, we'll give you even some more good ideas.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham on a Thursday. We're going to switch gears on you a little bit. You know, last week we had the new women's lacrosse coach at Clemson, since they've now created the sport. They're going to have to wait a year until they play. And Wes, we have a new fresh face in women's lacrosse at Virginia Tech.
Yeah, fresh to Blacksburg, brand new to Blacksburg. Please welcome Kristen Skira to ACC Network and Packer in Durham. But we're talking about a former All-American at Duke who's now coaching at Virginia Tech by way of West Point. So the circuitous route pays off. Kristen, congratulations. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me, guys.
So we go West Point to Blacksburg. That's an interesting combination, isn't it?
It is. It is. There's definitely some crossover, you know, in terms of the institutions and their dedication to service and just standard of excellence. But it is, being back in this, we call it civilian world. It's more my world, what I grew up in, what I played in as an athlete. But it's there's definitely some changes that I'm getting used to, for sure.
So what was it about this particular opportunity? You obviously know the landscape of the league. I mean, that's not going to be a surprise to you. The success that Syracuse, Boston College, Duke, North Carolina. I mean, you know what you're getting into. What was it about Virginia Tech, though, in particular, Kristen?
Yeah, and you're totally right. Like, I knew for me, my end game or my goal as a coach was to get back to the ACC, to get back to what I see as the Mecca, as, you know, the best conference and with the top teams in the country. So I always knew that this was my goal, my career goal. And I think why I chose Virginia Tech and why the time seemed right was, well, for starters, I do have a little bit of family history here. My brother and my dad are both graduates, my aunt, my uncle. So I do have some, I had a lot of familiarity with the university and the town and just the pride that comes along with being a part of Hokie Nation. I think on top of that, I was, you know, Whit Babcock, our athletic director here, was a huge driving force in why I chose to be a Hokie. I really loved his vision. You know, I love the ethos of the athletic department in terms of being people-oriented, and I just loved, I just felt like the program, you know, watching it from afar, I felt like it was a sleeping giant, and there's so much potential to be at the top of the ACC and be competing for national championships, and so I thought I could definitely, it was a place where I could be really happy personally with my family living here in Blacksburg, the town of easy living, but also professionally, I knew I'd be able to accomplish my goals here in terms of being one of the best teams and best coaches in the country.
Kristen, there's a lot of momentum about Virginia Tech right now with the capital campaign that Witt's certainly involved with and his vision. You mentioned facility upgrades across the board, which always seems to be a deal, whether we're talking Virginia Tech or anywhere else. I tell you, the other good news you've got is that you've got some seniors that said, hey, you know what? I want to come back for a fifth year. There's nothing like having experience in this league, which is loaded with really good teams.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like we have 11 seniors. You know, I think there were some teams in the ACC that returned double digits last year. And so watching those teams play, you're like, wow, like those, like, women can read each other's minds. And there's some there, you know, there's no replacement for experience. I think back to my college career and I'm like, I cannot believe what we would have been like if, you know, my class could have stayed for a fifth year and played together for that long. I mean, the chemistry is just unbelievable that you can create in 5 years. So, yeah, for us to return, we return our leading point scorer last year with Sarah, and then we'll return a really talented goalie. So two key positions that we get to return, and I'm super excited for that.
Kristen, your resume is fascinating. Not only were you the head coach at West Point, you also worked at Annapolis. You've been to the West Coast. You've coached internationally. I mean, how does all this fit? I mean, it's interesting to see. Mark and I are kind of getting on the bandwagon here of lacrosse and its popularity nationally. I mean, we've seen players from Texas and Florida But I'm getting the sneaking suspicion here that this sport's moving nationally faster than a lot of people give it credit for.
Yeah, I mean, this sport's unbelievable. And I just think I don't know if you guys have had a chance to check out the Women's Professional League this summer, just kind of reinventing the game with some really cool rules. And, and so the professional lacrosse this summer has been super cool to watch. And I was talking to my parents the other day and I was like, when I was growing up, middle school, high school, I decided in high school that I was going to play lacrosse in college, but the only way for me to see really good lacrosse was to like go to the local university, which luckily for me, that was the University of Maryland. So I got to see Jen Adams and, the best of the best play there, Kathy Reese and all those great players. But I think it's so cool now for young girls that they can just tune in, anywhere around the world and just see great lacrosse and have these role models to aspire to be like. I mean, for me, it was like I wanted to be like Lisa Leslie and Rebecca Lobo, who didn't even play the sport, my passion sport. And so I think it's so cool now for young women and young girls everywhere to be able to look up to lacrosse players. And they are. It's an awesome sport. You have to be tough. You have to be fast. And it's just a great sport where you can take away lots of lessons to last a lifetime. So it's awesome.
Kristen, from a recruiting perspective, obviously you're selling Virginia Tech, but you've got to be able to sell the ACC as well, right? I mean, the quality of play in this league is just ridiculous. And I would think, given how hot the sport is, your background, all the places you've been, in some respects, it's kind of an easy sell because Virginia Tech right now, as I mentioned, has a lot of momentum with what's going on campus. The league is great. You got a fresh start. Seems like a perfect storm.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, I don't know. Everything about this place is a great sell for any young lacrosse player that wants to be the best and, be winning a championship. You want to look at the ACC. And I just think, I was talking to a recruit the other day, and when I look back on my experience playing in the ACC, just the standard of excellence, the eliteness that you have to compete, that elite level that you have to compete at every single day, just going up against the best of the best who have, like, those high ambitions and high goals. I mean, just being able to do that, teaching your body and your mind to compete at that level every single day, I think that breeds skills that have lasted me a lifetime. And, they carry over into your personal and professional life once you graduate and move on from the ACC. So I think it's an unbelievable conference to be a part of. The university, our facilities are outstanding here. I joke that, I mean, I have a recurring dream that I have a year of eligibility still left. and I just keep saying, I'm going to come back and I'm going to choose to play at Virginia Tech for that final year. Who wouldn't want to come here? It's awesome.
I love it. Well, welcome back to the league. And we look forward to seeing you and your team play and all that great stuff. I know you're thrilled. And I know you're also fired up about 3 weeks and a day from now for Enter Sandman. And you got your tickets and you're ready to go to get everybody back on campus and let that place rock again.
Yep, and we get to beat UNC, so what better combination,
See, there we go. The Duke alum, it didn't take hard at all. It didn't took no time pack for the Duke alum and now Virginia Tech's head coach to say, you know what, no, job one, beat Carolina. There you go. Kristen Skyer, congratulations. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You too.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
All right, Wes, get back to some football because we are 3 weeks away from kick when we make a road trip to Raleigh, NC, me, you, and Tuffy right there at Carter Finley for the show. 3 weeks from right now. It's going to be great. But right down the road from Raleigh are the boys in Chapel Hill. And old Mac Brown joined us yesterday. We had a good time with Coach.
Yep. Started the visit off asking him about the preseason top 10 ranking, becoming the media darlings, and does that matter at this point?
We have won the media game, and that's important. We went from two wins to a team that's being talked about as a team that could have a significant difference, make a difference in next year's season. So I've told the guys I'm proud of that. Don't take that lightly, because when the coaches have reached out and said these guys are much improved, that's a good thing. So it's not something to stick your chest out. It's not something to be arrogant about, but it's something to have a lot of pride in. So I take pride in what has happened in this program over the last 2 years. The truth is, we get into facts, is we've got everybody back but Chaz Surratt on defense. We've added some good recruits, so we should be better on defense than we've been the 2 years that we're here. The truth is, we lost four of the best skilled people in the country on offense, and the jury's still out on who's going to step up in those areas. And we're talented, but we're not as experienced. We're probably more like we were with those four 2 years ago, when you're talking about Daz Newsome and De'Ami Brown and Javonte Williams and Michael Carter. That's a load. That's over 4,000 yards worth of offense. So we can't just say, we're going to be fine. We'll be different. We're going to be a different offense than we were. We still have the trigger guy. We still got all the offensive linemen back for the third year in a row, which is unbelievable. We got our tight end back. But those skill guys outside and the running backs need to step up. And here, 23 days from kickoff, we're still trying to work that out.
Okay, so does this come down to then a discussion about Ty Chandler, a discussion of Josh Downs, Choffrey Brown, all these other guys? Does it slow your installation? Does it slow what you and Coach Longo want to do? Or did you get enough, and I guess this is, ties back to the spring, did you get enough done in the spring that you're able to keep your pace going with 23 days left to go before kickoff?
Yes, with your offensive line and your quarterback, we're not having to slow down our pace. In fact, I'll have to be careful in the third year of the same offense with most of the same players, and especially Sam Howell, the same quarterback. Our tendency will be to do too much and put too much in with a couple of new guys we got to plug in. Ty Chandler's done a good job. Will he be better than the two we had last year? That's a load. Both those guys will be playing here in a month. They're playing now with NFL team. Sam Howell looks as good or better than ever. He hasn't changed any. Got more experienced. He's in better shape. He moves better. He gets it. He's a better leader than he was 3 years ago. So, obviously, he puts us in a position to do really well, but we got to get Bo Corrales back. We got to get Choffrey Brown in a position where he's very much like his brother. He's the fastest player on our team. Emory Simmons is playing well. Josh Downs looks like he's got a chance to be a special player. Antoine Green hadn't played very much. He's big, he's tall, he's fast. It's time. So we've got to get the timing with our receivers and our quarterbacks down, but the pieces are all there. It's our job to coach them up. And then you've got Ty Chandler, a young freshman that's an interesting dynamic coming in, was a quarterback at Richmond County last year. Caleb Hood is doing some good things. He will probably be in that rotation in 3 weeks. He's a 225-pound back that runs really fast. And then you've got DJ Jones coming out of Fayetteville that's really fast also, that broke his ankle before the Orange Bowl and didn't get to play. So we've got enough pieces there. We got a very difficult opener at Blacksburg. Virginia Tech it's been a tough team for North Carolina, but it's a tough place to play. Justin Fuente does a tremendous job. I'm sure they've got all of our positive publicity plastered all over the lockers in the locker room. And I would if I was them, and they're getting sick of hearing about North Carolina and how cute we are right now. But it'll be a fun opener in a tough game, and we'll know a lot more about who we are when we leave Blacksburg that night.
Coach, that's where I was going to go with you before you brought up going on the road to Virginia Tech. You know, and you've been part of great teams at North Carolina, national championship teams at Texas, played for one and won it, played for one and lost it. But those kind of teams are the ones that love to go on the road. And I've always thought that regardless we're talking about football, basketball, baseball, you pick a sport, it doesn't matter. The best teams love going on the road. And, you know, you've elevated the program since you got there. But you know what? You go to Florida State, you didn't handle success well last year. Now, Virginia has always been a bugaboo. It's always tough in Charlottesville. I think for your team to get to that next level, that first game, as you just pointed out, Lane Stadium, Enter Sandman, it's been 2 years since everybody got together. It is a great venue to play a football game. But the best teams love when people can't wait for them to get there, right? So with that said, have you talked to your team about, hey, the consistency on the road is the key to us getting to the next level?
Mark, we have. We constantly talk about trying to take the next step. We were a bad team when we got here. And then we were an okay team, an average team. And then last year we got to be a good team. But people say, well, you didn't win the Florida State game. Well, we didn't win all of them. So, and that's what we want to do, yes. But we are human, and we are learning, and we are growing. And then, Mark, you get into, with my 33 years, the philosophy of an opening ball game. Would you rather play a bad team at home and not show anything and screw up and kind of have a scrimmage and it doesn't matter. You're going to win anyway, so everybody's happy and leaves, and they all talk about how great we are. Or would you rather get a home game against a really good team and your kids work so hard all summer and there's a buzz with your fan base and the media because it's going to be a great opener? Or do you go on the road for that really good team like we are? And I think this is a good test for our team right now. We have gotten a lot of publicity. We are better. It's 100% we're better. But are we going to be able to replace the things we lost on offense and play better on defense? And we may be a different team. We may not be a high-scoring team as much as we were. We may be more of a defense and kicking game and still move the ball offensively. But to win, to be a great team, you've got to win, and you've got to win on the road. And that's it. We always say win at home first and then win on the road. When we were here before, Wes grew up with this, and then we went to Texas, they said, well, they can't win at home because we didn't win anywhere. And then after that, they said, well, I start winning home. Well, can't win on the road. Well, then you start winning on the road. Then you lose to Florida State and said, can't win the big one. Well, you got to win all of them at some point. We do understand that. So we're at the point where we won at home last year, except for Notre Dame. We won on the road in a better light than we had previously, but we still lost two games against Florida State, who was a talented team that we allowed them to play really well that night and get started. We got in a hole and couldn't get out. Virginia's probably about like we were last year, and it was a great game that came down to the last play of the game. They had their quarterback back, and they played well at home. And then we got beaten down in the fourth quarter with two top five teams with Notre Dame and Texas A&M. So, Mark, we're constantly talking to our team about who we are, what's out there, what we're doing well and what we need to fix. And we're dreadfully honest with them. So, in fact, when I tell them you got beaten down in the fourth quarter against these two top five teams, so if you want to be a top five team, get stronger, get faster, we got to play more depth, and you got to play with more confidence. And all they do now is say facts. It's facts. We got you, yeah. Coach. We hear you, man. And that's where this team is, and I like this team.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of similarities to, and maybe happened faster than most thought it would, but I think you've done a remarkable job when coming back to Chapel Hill of looking forward. You've always approached this going forward since you returned. I think in some ways, Coach, that's something that doesn't get discussed enough. You've been moving the thing forward, not thinking about what happened, you know, for the previous 10 years before. It's about what we're doing now in this bounce back time. And I think the previous 2 years show it.
Wes, you know, so many coaches now, and I was more aware of it when I was out in your position watching coaches. So many coaches now are afraid to say we've got a chance to be good. I don't know, and we don't have much depth, and, you know, we're struggling, and, you know, we're young. And Coach Raw used to tell me, if you're young and good, that's a good thing. If you're young and bad, man, you're about to get fired. So just being young ain't the answer. So I think the thing that I'm at a wonderful place in my life where I want us to be good. I want us to be positive. I want us to be a cool program. I want these kids to have fun. I want North Carolina fans to walk around with their chest stuck out because they're proud of their football program. And unless I'm doing that, they can't do it.
And I expect them to be good, Wes. I do. I think they got a chance to be really, really good.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
News out of Syracuse, not quite the ton. There's Fuller, Chester, everybody getting a look in this morning. Yeah. News out of Syracuse, not long after we went off the show yesterday,
10:05,
right around lunchtime, that the Orange have elected to retire four jerseys and three females, including three females. These are the first women to have their jerseys retired. So congratulations this morning to Felicia Leggett-Jack in women's basketball, eighth all-time in career points, fourth in career rebounds. The men's lacrosse jersey of Gary Gate, who was a great coach on the women's side and now obviously is in charge of the men's lacrosse program. First year as head coach there. Jersey to be retired. Anna Goodale in rowing. 2003, 2005, first-team All-America, three-time All-America period, made second-team in 2004. Soliday Award winner, highest honor presented to a Syracuse female and male student-athlete. COSIDA Academic All-American and six-year member of the United States rowing team, including four world titles and a 2008 Olympic medalist for Anna. So certainly well-deserved. And Katie Rowan in lacrosse, Syracuse's all-time leader in points and assists. A Towarton Award finalist, a Honda Award finalist, three-time All-America first team, two-time Big East Attacker of the Year, four-time Big East first team in women's lacrosse. They all look well-deserved, Pack, across the board.
Now, there's no question about that. So congratulations to all four. And when I saw this story yesterday, Wes, the very first thing that popped in my head is awesome for all four of them. But, you know, we've kicked around the idea. In fact, I think we brought it up to John Waldhack about Tiana and what she meant, her story in terms of inspiration, what she accomplished, physically what she had to go through in her battle would be kind of a natural fit to put her name into the rafters, too. And hopefully one day that happens. But that was the first thing that popped in my head yesterday going through that list. And, again, a lot of those names I wasn't familiar with. We knew about Gary Gate because Gary's been on the show. But when you go through the list of accomplishments, there's no question. I mean, every one of them were spectacular in what they were able to accomplish at Syracuse and beyond. But it wouldn't surprise me to see Tiana at some point in time come back to Syracuse and look up to the rafters and go, guess what? There it is. Again, one of the truly most – since we started this network, which is coming up on 2 years – that may be as inspirational a story as you're going to find. And there's a bunch to pick from. But hopefully one of these days she can hear her name be called and say, guess what, Tiana? You need to come back to Syracuse. We have a special deal for you.
Yeah. Emphasis always when I get into these discussions, we're looking for clarity. We're talking about jerseys retired, not numbers retired. But certainly an honor, and in particular for those three ladies, a unique and inaugural honor from Syracuse University. So nice to see, and congratulations to everybody on the awards. Of course, we know Gary Gates' number is special to Syracuse men's lacrosse. So nice to see the jersey being honored in that fashion as well. You're right about Tiana, though, Pack. I think it's going to be interesting to see the timing on that. Gary Gate, the 22 here, three-time first-team All-America, Air Gate there against Penn from 1988 to 1990. What a special moment for him, right?
No question. And like I said, all of these are certainly well-deserved. And, you know, it's always interesting, too, how schools address the retirement part of that, whether it be a number, a jersey, whatever the case may be. And everybody's different. You know, what applies to your school doesn't necessarily work for school X, and so forth. But again, you go through the accolades that you just listed in the last 5 minutes with these three ladies and gentlemen with Gary. Again, these are like no-brainers. In fact, there's some Syracuse fans probably going, oh, what took so long in that department? But again, they got it right with those four. And I'm sure there's some others that instantly come to Syracuse fans' minds that go, hey, there's some more you can add. Well, guess what? Just hang tight. We're getting ready to open that carrier dome back up for football season. But again, congratulations to all.
Yeah, Gary Gates' number, the jerseys of the other three ladies, as announced yesterday by Syracuse. And you're right, it does vary from school to school, doesn't it? And having sat in those meetings, it's never an easy decision because you get into when you retire a number in a sport, you know, take the case of, look at what's happened at Clemson and look at what's happened at NC State with certain numbers, right, Pack? end up putting a ceremonial patch back on the jersey to recognize the player whose number maybe had been honored or retired, and yet you also want to give it to somebody who, you know, certainly deserves it, right? We saw that happen with Deshaun Watson and Steve Fuller's number at Clemson, right?
Exactly right. And it worked out all right, though. You know, Steve Fuller had a great career and has got his name in lights and the whole routine, and that the Watson fella turned out to be a pretty good player at Clemson,
yep,
leading into a national championship. So if he wants number four,
yeah,
you know, if everybody's cool with it, hey, go ahead, go wear number four and throw a bunch of touchdown passes or whatever the case may be. But it's always an interesting process. And again, you've been part of those kind of meetings where at Georgia Tech and so forth. And like I said, everybody's got a different set of parameters how they determine that. But when you go through the list of that Syracuse announced yesterday, they were four for four.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.